ShareCare, helping you get younger, get guidance, get better care, get smart, get fit. Radio MD presents ShareCare Radio with Daria Long Gillespie, MD.
Hi, welcome to ShareCare Radio. I'm Dr. Daria. Let's get into the latest health news of the week. First of all, I'm sure everyone has been hearing more and more about the measles outbreak, and it's hit home for us in Atlanta because we've had the first confirmed case of measles in Georgia since 2012. According to the news, it's been an infant who was infected, and that infant was infected and arrived from a country outside the U.S., so it does not appear that it's connected to the outbreak that came from California. You know, that changes the numbers, though. We're seeing measles cases reported in 17 states with over 150 confirmed cases at this point. So let's look at some other statistics for measles that I want everyone to know. First one is 92, and that's a number of 2015 measles cases so far linked to the theme park in Southern California. Another is this disease was really eradicated as of 2000, but it's come back for a number of reasons. That's what we're going to discuss. One is it's highly contagious. Think 90% attack rate. What does that mean? That means that if you are not immunized against measles and you are exposed to the measles virus, you have a 90% chance of getting infected with it. It's very high. It's a lot higher than a lot of other viruses and illnesses that we think of today. Number two is the number two, literally, and that's 2 hours. That's the amount of time that the measles virus can stay suspended in the air. So if somebody coughs and they're in a grocery store, an airplane, or a classroom, that virus droplet can stay in the air so that when you come back into that room, not knowing that there was somebody who was sick there, you can get infected. I also want you to know the number is 92 to 94%, and that is herd immunity. That means the number of people who need to be vaccinated for effectively the virus to be, for the rest the community to be protected. So, because you always have to think there are people who can't be vaccinated, children under the age of one, people who have immune system problems or other conditions. So you need 92 to 94% of the community to be vaccinated to be considered safe. You know, measles is still worldwide. You know, 20 million is the number of measles cases we see around the world every year, with almost 200,000 people dying from it every year. That's multiple people daily dying from measles. Gets to the fact that measles is dangerous. Before 1963, there were an estimated 400 to 500 people a year who died in the U.S. from measles. And the really awful thing is the majority of those were young, otherwise healthy children. There are also about 4,000 who would develop encephalitis, which is a dangerous swelling of the brain. 1 in 10 will develop an ear infection that can sometimes result in permanent hearing loss. And, you know, one to two in 1,000 will die from measles. Compare that to the vaccine, which has a less than 1 in 1 million rate of severe reactions. So you're talking less than 1 in 1 million compared to 1 to 2 in 1,000 death rate. And you'll see that measles, getting measles is far more dangerous than having the vaccine. It's also important to note that there's no real therapy for measles. Much like we probably heard with Ebola, is that it's supportive therapy. Doctors will give a patient who has measles IV fluids and other things to help control the virus while their own body has to take care of it. But there's no direct antiviral treatment that we can give. For this reason, you know, the next study or next piece of news is talking about California lawmakers and discussions to end the personal belief vaccine exemptions. This is really responding to this outbreak, and two California lawmakers said they would introduce legislation to end the right of parents in the state to exempt their children from school vaccinations based on personal beliefs. They say that like we said, about 92 have been diagnosed with measles in the state, and a daycare center at a high school in LA, suburb of Santa Monica, closed last week, and more than a dozen infants were placed under a 3-week quarantine after a baby enrolled in the program was diagnosed with measles. So it's really important. This is something that's going to be more and more of a discussion, mainly because there's these high rates of personal exemption beliefs in some particular states. And that's often due to the risk parents concerned with of vaccines leading to autism. And just a reminder is that there are many, many studies that have shown that these vaccines are safe. There was one study in Denmark that looked at children with autism and vaccines and showed that the relative risk of autism was actually slightly lower to equal after having a vaccine versus kids who had not had vaccines. So really, the vaccine did not raise their risk of autism at all. And same thing for a study in Montreal. In addition, a study in 2004 from the CDC failed to find any connection between a vaccine and autism or autism spectrum disorder. And lastly, the chief scientific officer of Autism Speaks, one of the major organizations for autism, has been coming out to say that vaccines do not cause autism and urging all children to be fully vaccinated. So I'm sure we'll continue to hear more about measles, but that is our latest update on that. On to some other news. Britain is set to improve techniques to create babies from three people. Last week, the lawmakers voted to allow in vitro fertilization of babies using the DNA of a mother, a father, and another donor. Now, it's still pending the secondary house in England and Britain, but they think that there's a good chance that it could be approved. It would really be the first country to authorize in vitro fertilization technique that involves altering a human egg or embryo before transferring it to the womb. Now, they're saying the technique would only be used sparingly for when mothers have a defect in their mitochondrial DNA. So in that case, the mitochondrial DNA would be taken from a donor. Now, mitochondrial DNA is a very small portion of our DNA. It comes directly from the mother with no addition from the father. So the majority of the genes would still be the mother's and the father's. And it would help in all disorders for mitochondrial DNA, which usually are nervous system or muscle disorders that are very rare. But everyone's a little bit worried that it could open the door for the creation of designer babies. And they want some more consultations and research to make sure that what we're doing is safe. Our next article is getting to a little bit of a male and female equality that we may not want, and that is that lung cancer is now the top cancer killer for women in rich nations. Lung cancer has long been a top killer for men, but it wasn't as much for women because women were not as much a high rate of smokers as men. But they caught up with men about 30 years ago, and now we're seeing the consequences of it with lung cancer rates increasing. Fortunately, we're now starting to see smoking rates decline, so we can hopefully see this lung cancer rate over the next few years or decades start to decrease. Remember, the American Institute for Cancer Research says that half of all cancers are preventable. Healthy diets, getting enough exercise, cut the risk, vaccines like HPV and the hepatitis vaccine, and of course, not smoking. That's the number one risk factor for cancer. And quitting by middle age can avoid 60% of the risk of dying from cancer. Here's another piece of news that I was really interested in as somebody who eats a lot of fruits and vegetables, and that is that a new study from Boise State is amongst the first to predict a person's pesticide exposure based on information of their usual diet. And, you know, health-conscious individuals, we understand the benefits of eating fresh fruits and veggies, but a lot of us, and I know that myself, I was worried about this, may not be aware of the amount of pesticides. So they looked at the dietary exposure of nearly 4,500 people and saw that the most common insecticides used were organophosphates, and they were often found on conventionally grown produce in the U.S. Now, we know that these kind of detrimental health effects seen on agricultural workers. And they show that amongst people who eat similar amounts of fruits and vegetables, they had actually an elevated rate of pesticide exposure. And if you eat organic, you're going to have a lower rate of pesticide exposure. So what do? I don't want you to stop eating fruits and vegetables. You can, option one is to have everything organic, but I know organic can be more expensive. It's not always available. So if you want to do it, look at what they call the dirty dozen. Those are the fruits and vegetables that have the highest rate of pesticides. And if you want to go organic, choose these because you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. Those include apples, strawberries, grapes, celery, peaches, spinach, red peppers, nectarines, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, snap peas, potatoes, hot peppers, kale, and peaches. You can find this on the Environmental Working Group site. Also, they want a really kind of gross study was that some high schoolers did was drug-resistant bacteria lurking in subway stations. They swabbed subway stations to see what was growing, and they found that there were not only bacteria, but drug-resistant bacteria, which is pretty much as bad as rats in my mind. And they did this over their summer vacation. So when you're in public settings, especially like a subway, it's important to wash your hands and use that hand sanitizer as much as you can. There you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for the week. I'm Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for tuning in, and stay well.